Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki. So today we're reading from Madhya Leela, chapter 4, which is entitled Sri Madhavendra Puri's Devotional Service. And we're continuing this description of the festival that has taken place for the installation of Gopal on Govardhan Hill. So today we're covering verses 80 to 83. So I'll just read the first few translations and then we'll recite 84 together. So this is 80. Sri Madhavendra Puri offered water to Gopal for washing his mouth, and he gave him betel nuts to chew. Then while aarti was performed, all the people chanted Jai, Jai, all glories to Gopal. Arranging for the Lord's rest, Sri Madhavendra Puri brought a new cot, and over this he spread a new bedspread, and thus made the bed ready. A temporary temple was constructed by covering the bed all around with a straw mattress. Thus there was a bed and a straw mattress to cover it. After the Lord was laid down to rest on the bed, Madhavendra Puri gathered all the brahmanas who had prepared the prasadam and said to them, Now feed everyone sumptuously from the children on up to the aged. So text 84. Translation. All the people gathered there sat down to honor the prasadam, and by they took food. All the brahmanas and their wives were fed first. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to the Varnashram system, the brahmanas are always honored first. Thus, at the festival, the brahmanas and their wives were first offered the remnants of food, and then the others, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. This has always been the system, and it is still prevalent in India, even though the caste brahmanas are not qualified. The system is still current due to the Varnashram institutional rules and regulations. That's the end of the purport. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, an interesting little detail there in the midst of this festival. And this festival has been the culmination of a whole adventure with Srila Madhavendra Puri. This installation of Gopal on Govardhan Hill. This has all happened largely through instructions to Madhavendra Puri through dreams. And actually, as the story unfolds, the later pastimes where he travels to Ramuna, and there's a sweet rice pastime there as well. Many of these things, and then collecting sandalwood, camphor, all of these are instructed to him by the Supreme Lord himself. And that's very interesting, because within his heart, through dreams, through different other stages of meditation, actually it was initially in Vrindavan when Madhavendra Puri was in meditation at the end of the day, and then Krishna came to him and offered him some milk and said, you look like you've been fasting. Here, take some milk. He says, in my village, no one fasts. My village, everyone eats nicely. And if there are some poor mendicants, poor travelers, and they do not get what they want from begging, or they do not ask, then I deliver it to them personally. So at that time, Madhavendra Puri did not realize this was Krishna. And so he accepted the milk. I mean, he was overwhelmed by the actual appearance of this boy who left him with this pot of milk and said, I'll come back later and collect the pot. And then at night in the dream, Krishna came to him as this boy. And he said, I have a service for you. I'm lying there in the bushes. It's causing me a lot of distress. It's hot in the summer, it's cold in the winter, and it's not very comfortable, these thorny bushes. So I want you to take me out. And Madhavendra Puri realized this was Krishna himself who had come to see him just earlier in the day. And he felt, how unfortunate I was. Not that I saw Krishna, but Krishna came personally and I didn't recognize him. I thought he was just an ordinary boy. So then, from that dream, this whole episode has been sort of sparked or initiated. And then with the help of all the villagers, they cleared a path through the jungle, they excavated the deity, And then we're at this stage where they've just installed this deity on top of Govardhan Hill, according to his instructions. This is the Gopal deity. And the entire village has come together to make a grand festival. As Jai Krishna Prabhu was explaining yesterday, he said, yes, with the Lord's mercy, sometimes out of nothing you can organize a massive festival. And actually that was what the verse said a couple of days ago. It said that within a day, everything was done. Within one day, I'm just trying to find the page. Yes, it says, the wonderful festival and installation of Sri Gopalji was arranged in one day. Certainly all this was accomplished by the potency of Gopal. No one but a devotee can understand this. So here the Lord has very interestingly given directions for his excavation, his installation, and then he's facilitated through the hearts of the devotees a wonderful offering whereby a whole range of members of that village all come together and contribute something. Water pots, cooking. It's described there were huge quantities of chapatis being produced, huge quantities of preparations, 5 to 7 men involved in just producing chapatis. Everyone came and offered something. And this was all done without, you know, extensive... what do we do these days? We have extensive meetings for Janmashtami for 3 months in advance. We're having meetings at the warehouse and all over the place. This organization, this conference, that conference, this consultation. Here, this all happened instantaneously by the mercy of the Lord. And so we should never forget that that is the actual potency of the Lord. And when the Lord desires a festival to take place, the Lord's festival will take place. Regardless of the qualification or capability or sophistication or advancement of his servants. Actually, that's an interesting feature of the Lord and the devotees. Because typically the Kamis, the materialists, the Daityas, the Danavas, they are a lot more sophisticated, typically, than devotees. Than those who are sura, those who are interested in the service of the Lord. They have great, extensive engineering skills. They have great material capabilities. They organize things very nicely. They exhibit a lot of competence, which can, of course, be used for the service of the Lord. But what's interesting here is the contrast, that devotees with their simple lifestyle, simply wishing to serve Krishna, can actually achieve a much bigger result than the Kamis can with all their sophistication. Now that only happens when there are advanced devotees like Madhavendra Puri who are in touch with the Lord. As we say, especially if you do some deity worship, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sadapasyanti Suraya Divivachakshara Tatam Tad Prasavipanyamo Jagravam Sasimindate Vishnu Rat Paramam Padam. Just as those with ordinary vision see the sun's rays in the sky, so the wise and learned devotees always see the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. Because those devotees are highly praiseworthy, they can also reveal that to others. So because the devotees, advanced devotees like Madhavendra Puri, are seeing the Lord in his abode, and they have a connection with the Lord, and they have an understanding or an inner feeling, or in this case, direct communication, if you're fortunate enough to have that, they can also bring out the glory of the Lord and his abode to all others around him. So when you have devotees of that caliber, even if the material facilities are not very spectacular. For instance, here the deity was found in a jungle. Not a glamorous place, a jungle. There were no industries supplying goods there. No Amazon delivery. Ring up, delivered within 2 hours. That wasn't available. But you had simple villagers with their simple village utensils and cows and grains. Simple things. But by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of his pure devotee, all of that came together, and came together in a very grand festival. So the deity on top of the hill has been installed, worshipped very nicely, bathed multiple times during this whole episode, given fragrant oils, sandalwood paste, made very comfortable. A nice stone was placed on top of the hill, another stone for the deity's back as a backrest. So he's been situated very nicely. And at this stage, once all the offerings are completed, the prasad, which was described earlier as the Lord ate everything, but somehow inconceivably it all remained still there, and only Madhavendra Puri could actually perceive the Lord eating. So that prasadam, which is now the remnants of the Lord's enjoyment, is being distributed to all the devotees. And certainly we're all familiar with that aspect of every festival. Sometimes the prasadam queue is a lot longer than the abhishek queue. And you wonder, what happened? These are the transcendental pastimes, where prasadam is a naturally very attractive attractive episode in a festival. Because people like to eat. So when prasadam is available and it's delicious, then people naturally gravitate towards that. So here the prasadam distribution is taking place, a perfectly normal part of all festivals. Lord Chaitanya's leelas are always accompanied by extensive prasadam distribution. In one place, it's described he gave the devotees 5 times what they could actually eat and made them eat it, filled them up to their necks. This happens a lot. And so here there's this interesting detail given about how prasadam is honored. And so it's mentioned that, first of all, the brahmanas and their wives were fed. So this is interesting, because even though every single person in this episode is a devotee of the Lord, very dear to the Lord, and they're all contributing in a magnificent way to serve the Lord, there's no real consideration that one service is more important than another. But there is still a sort of an order of precedence in terms of offering respect. And that doesn't take away from the sort of the equivalent status of everyone in terms of the spirit soul. But it is an important part of the culture. Because the culture is what has allowed all of these people to accept the leadership of Sri Madhavendra Puri, who is obviously a topmost brahmana, a sannyasi. And he has led the entire village into performing this wonderful service for the Lord on the Lord's direct instruction. So his qualifications are very clear. And so therefore, given that the Lord himself establishes the brahmanas as being better than him in one sense, these are the Lord's own words. Now, brahmanas never consider themselves to be better than the Lord. But the Lord considers the brahmanas to be better than him. Why? Because they are always engaged in serving the Lord. They are always engaged in living in a way that the Lord is their only focus and goal. They neglect, at least the pure ones, they neglect their own comforts, they neglect their own privileges, luxuries, and they try to serve the Lord. So the Lord is very happy with that. And so he says, no matter of opulent ingredients will actually satisfy me. But if you feed my brahmana, when the brahmana eats, I eat through the mouth of the brahmanas. So he likes that system. And it's the Lord's system. Chatur varanyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagasaha. So chatur varanyam, these 4 orders, and then of course the 4 ashrams, are created by the Lord. And they are his creation, his srishti, his concoction, not someone else's. So it's always a good idea when we align ourselves to the system of the Lord. That way we're protected. Otherwise there are no shortage of systems that people can try and have tried in Kali Yuga. There are so many methods of government. This ism, that ism. No, we've tried all of them. Communism, capitalism. What else is there?
Socialism,
yes. Marxism, yes. All of these. And then you have anarchism, as Prabhuji is, anarchy. Yes, these days even that, which is the opposite of any kind of system, is called a system. Vaishnavism, well, that is quite rare. That is only by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. But the others have been tried, and there are so many other combinations of them. I think recently the leader of China, a year or two ago, he gave an enormous speech. And he published it was a five-hour speech or something. And he published a book, and it was Communism with Chinese Characteristics. So, I mean, nothing wrong with that in that sense, but it was one of the isms which has worked well for a country. Communism, but with special characteristics. So you can see that whatever system someone has, there'll be someone who applies it and adds their own characteristics to it. So that's systems in this world. So we cannot be overly overwhelmed or overly excited by any systems concocted by anyone. For one system, there is another system which one other group of proponents is claiming is better. And what is ultimately better? Well, then people measure according to different criteria. Does it make you wealthy? Does it keep you subordinated? Does it allow leaders to control? Does it give people a sense of freedom? Even though actually there isn't much freedom. Does it give you a sense of freedom? Does it allow you, as I mentioned, to be wealthy? Does it allow you to be powerful? Does it give you equal rights, perhaps? Another system may favor some sort of moral development of its citizens. Another system may even favor actual spiritual progress. So systems are numerous. And so it is always safe, and this is Prabhupada's stance, that out of all the numerous concoctions and variations and traditions that can be developed within the world, due to the fact that Manoratena Satidhavato Bahi, just as men's minds are wandering, running after the next conception, that leads to many, many options. So rather than falling into that category, better to follow a system which is given by Krishna, which is designed for everyone's upliftment. And so that is this, Chaturvaranyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasaha, that according to guna, qualities, according to karma, according to activities, the qualities a person possesses, their character, and then the actual activities that they're accustomed to, they should be arranged into different orders and classifications, so that a very nice harmonious arrangement can be made, and that individuals aren't trying to act on another's platform. People these days, as I mentioned once before, they want the privileges of all of the different ashrams and varnas, but they don't want to follow the obligations of any of them. Each of the categorizations has its privileges, yes, it has special facilities, and it also has special duties. So these days no one wants the duties, but they want all the facilities. So we end up with a mess. So instead, if you actually have a group of good, qualified, trained brahmanas, then yes, the etiquette is they should be served first. Nothing wrong with that. They should be served first. They should take the lead in any honoring. They should take the lead in actually guiding ceremonies. They should not be subordinate. In this purport, Chaturvaranyam Maya Srishtam, Prabhupada says something interesting in the Gita. I mean, he says, I mean, the translation is, according to the three modes of nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. And although I'm the creator, you should know I'm the non-doer. Well, Prabhupada says that everything rests in Krishna, and he is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called brahmanas, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class. Technically called the Kshatriyas, due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the Vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And the Shudras, or laborers, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. So there's a whole scientific basis for this. It is not really just based upon just birth or privilege. It is actually based upon one's situation. So Brahmanas are supposed to be in the mode of goodness, Kshatriyas in the mode of passion, Vaishyas kind of a mixture of passion and ignorance, and Shudras, ignorance. So the classification is based upon that. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Brahmanas are supposed to be the policy makers in society. They are supposed to be guiding society, not the Kshatriyas. We get this wrong completely on many occasions. The Brahmanas are supposed to be the ones determining what the standards are to be followed, what should be done. Then the Kshatriya class, who are in the mode of passion and they can execute, they are supposed to execute the orders of the Brahmanas. So the kings would have their advisors, the Brahmanas, and different councils and this and that. And then the Kshatriyas would execute. And within execution, obviously great intelligence is required, great skill, great expertise, diplomacy. But it never supersedes or exceeds or covers the prerogative of the Brahmanas. Why? Because one is in goodness, another is in passion. And then you have the Vaishyas in passion and ignorance, and they're engaged in making money, mercantile work. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki. So you have this system, and if that system is followed, then there is success in society. Now you get some interesting effects when one varna pretends to be actually in another category. It is actually very, very, very difficult for someone to change their inherent nature. You know, we say by chanting the holy name, we can immediately be transformed, brought immediately to the mode of goodness. Well, it is very clear to see that a person, for instance, when they join the movement, who are maybe more situated in the lower modes, ignorance, passion, which is actually the majority of people now. As Kali Yuga progresses, the demographics are that more and more and more, the vast majority, will be situated in the lower modes of ignorance, passion. Ignorance, then some in passion, and a few minority in goodness. So when that happens, you can see that for someone who is more habituated or used to the modes of passion and ignorance, that doesn't disappear very quickly. It takes a long, long time to go. Just as a typical observation, there may be some for whom it happens quickly, depending on their actual quality of practice. And of course, also dependent on what they did in their previous lives. In one place, Prabhupada says, all of these students have joined here, and very quickly they have accepted the process of chanting the holy name. They've given up all their bad habits, and they are saintly in character. And he says, this is only possible because in their previous lives, they were on the path of devotional service, but they didn't complete the task. So now they are simply continuing from the place they left off, and very quickly it appears that they are advancing. Now in other places, Prabhupada has also said that he created people's qualifications. It's not the case that any living entity should consider, any disciple or any devotee should consider that it's based upon their own progress that they have a chance to render devotional service. No, but it's clear that there's a mixture, isn't there? If we know from the Bhagavad Gita, Neha Bikramanashasti Pratyavayana Vidyate, that from where one leaves off, whatever advancement one makes, it protects one from fear. And Prabhupada says one carries on from that point. That is true. It is also true that by the mercy of Prabhupada, advanced devotees, one can be elevated to way beyond what they deserve. That's possible. If the person simply accepts the mercy, they can also go very high, very quickly. So typically it takes, at least in my observation, a long time for the traits of the lower modes to disappear. Which makes an interesting situation, almost an interesting paradox, if you like. Because when we come to the temple, we are trained, or we should be trained, in Brahminical practice. That's actually the purpose of ISKCON, right? Prabhupada said he wanted to create a group of Brahmanas. He wanted to create a class of Brahmanas because they don't exist. So that's ISKCON's purpose. to create brahmanas who can then actually bring light to society. So that being Prabhupada's intention, you'll see that persons like that need to be created who are situated in the mode of goodness. So the training is all meant to be mode of goodness. The environment should be mode of goodness. I mean, just being here in this completely transcendental environment with the Supreme Lord beautifully being worshipped, all the devotees, this environment itself is a beautiful mode of goodness environment, which just naturally has an effect on our internal character, whatever mode we're in. It's just uplifting. It's energizing. And so we receive that when we come to the temple. And hopefully we practice that in our living conditions, in the ashram, where cleanliness is meant to be important, where our conduct is meant to be important, the way we speak, the way we interact. All of that's meant to be brahminically surcharged. So now what happens when you have someone who is situated fundamentally in the mode of passion, as an example? As many people are. Actually, those who are in passion are rarer than those who are in ignorance. Paschatya deshatarine. You know, Prabhupada came to the Western countries, which are, in his, as he describes, full of ignorance and passion, predominantly. These are the modes which are dominating. And now really all throughout the whole world. It's true. But modes of passion and ignorance are dominating. So someone in passion who has very little ignorance is quite becoming more and more rare. Now what happens when a person in passion comes into a brahminical environment? Well, what happens is that they learn activities which are brahminical. They learn activities, tasks, they learn duties, methods of serving which are actually brahminical in nature, which are mode of goodness in nature. But what else happens if their own nature is mode of passion? What happens is that they take those mode of goodness activities and perform them within a framework of passion. They can't do anything about it. Now this is good. It's good because it is the way to dovetail one's traits, one's inner nature, and purify it. By actually engaging our qualifications, skills, in whichever mode they happen to come in, and make the object of that Krishna, that is called dovetailing. And that's a bona fide process, as explained by Prabhupada. We dovetail whatever we have, offer it to Krishna. But that doesn't mean your inherent nature has changed. You've performed mode of goodness activities within a framework of passion. That has a different effect to performing mode of goodness activities in the mode of goodness. You can judge by the symptoms. A person in the mode of passion has certain traits. They're obsessed with achievement. They're obsessed with outcomes. They're obsessed with goals, agendas. They may be even obsessed with having definable, measurable goals where not a moment is wasted and you can account for every moment. Do you know anyone like that? These are traits of the mode of passion, not of the mode of goodness. But the activities a person like that is doing may be mode of goodness activities. So it's purifying. It's purifying for the person. But for someone who's in the mode of goodness, if someone in the mode of passion attempts to implement this kind of framework on someone who's actually fundamentally in the mode of goodness, it causes a great deal of disturbance to the person in goodness. Because they do not need to lower their framework down to the framework of passion just in order to do mode of goodness activities. They can do mode of goodness activities remaining in their mode of goodness. So that is where expert spiritual advancement and leadership is very important. A person in the mode of passion will naturally be an achiever. Many people will naturally be inspired by that. Because the society itself has created a group of people who need passion in order to thrive. Just, you know, just living in the world outside, just raising a family, going to work, is an activity that requires so much passion these days. It's very difficult, often for many people, just to make ends meet unless they inject a bit of passion into it. So the whole framework is geared against anyone actually rising to the mode of goodness. There are people like that, of course there are. But it's just becoming more and more rare. So we have to understand that even though we are all coming to the devotional platform, there are still different traits still predominating within the devotees on the various platforms. And this classification according to the modes is very interesting. It's very scientific, as Krishna says. It's based upon a person's qualities and character. And then to facilitate that and to respect the differences, then there is a system by which all of these modes and the people in those modes can work harmoniously. So therefore the brahmanas are given special consideration. In fact, brahmanas are one of five groups of people who are meant to be protected in society. Do you know the five groups? Five members of society are meant to be protected. The brahmanas. Brahmanas, children. Someone said cows. Yes. Women. And old men. Women are protected by default, so you don't need to say old women in that sense. So those are the five categories of persons that a civilized society protects. Now, to some extent, at least in this country and in the West, with the exception of cows and increasingly children in the womb, the others are given protection. Except brahmanas also. So you can see they're decreasing. In the past, the state would maintain the church, right? They would facilitate the priests. They would cater for them. The congregations would look after them as well. So the brahmanas were maintained in that sense. Old people through pensions, through healthcare, they are looked after. Children, yes, so much schooling, so much education, so much healthcare goes on, just materially speaking. Women, well, yes and no. Maybe, maybe not. It's open for debate. Prabhupada's description of what he considers society's progress in that is not very complimentary in some places. He says, okay, you've allowed abortion, you've allowed this and that to happen. The consequence is now that instead of responsible husbands taking care of their wives, that entire burden is placed on the state. This is called advancement. This is progress. So Prabhupada doesn't consider that to be progress. It's not an advancement that the government is now responsible for dealing with a particular group of people who should actually be cared for by others. So leaving everything to the government is not good policy. So these are five persons who should be protected. And you can see, obviously, as time goes on, even within the last 100 years, more and more categories are being thrown off that list. Prabhupada said, where is the protection given to the child in the womb? Just killed, without a second thought. And it's being liberalized across the world. So it's a problem. But these five persons should be protected, and brahmanas especially. Because by and large, the brahmanas will not make extensive arrangements for their own protection. So it is the duty of society to cater for persons like that. Just as Krishna said to Madhavendra Puri, he said, in my village no one goes hungry. If there is a brahmana, a mendicant, who naturally has no ability to fend for themselves, to subsist themselves, then I will supply it. If he doesn't get it by begging. So that's a bona fide activity for a mendicant. So when that protection is offered, a sannyasi like Madhavendra Puri, or indeed a great devotee, he just is a sannyasi, but any great devotee who acts with dependence on the Lord, who tries to keep their service very, very pure. Do we know others like that? Advaita Acharya, Kolavecha Sridhar, they didn't allow their need to acquire funds to survive to be an impediment in their practice of Krishna consciousness. They were exalted renunciates, exalted in their behavior. So when facilities made for the brahmanas, they can actually function without undue stress. Brahmanas' life is miserable. Just miserable from almost from day one. Yes, some misery or other. And that's one of the natures, one of the traits of a brahmana. Kshatriyas, others typically have a lot of enjoyment. It comes along with it. But for brahmanas, they have enough austerity just to deal with. just on a day-to-day basis. So when society helps them, when advanced societies help them, it is actually very good for society. The Brahmin is protected by Krishna. Don't need to worry about that too much. But when someone engages and offers something to a Brahmana, they benefit. Now the Brahmana has to be bona fide too. Otherwise the potency of that offering isn't there. So you can see when you have this nice arrangement where everyone plays their part, things are catered for very nicely. Here it is mentioned about the Brahmanas and also their wives. So as we mentioned, five groups of people who need protection. Well, the wife of a Brahmana is also a very important category. She's considered one of the seven mothers in society. So we have the five groups who need protection, and then seven mothers who are respected in society. And what are these seven mothers? One is obviously the wife of a Brahmana. The next is the cow, yes? Mother Earth. The wife of the Guru. Well, this is the same thing, wife of a Brahmana. The queen. Yes. Sorry? The nursemaid, yes. Have we missed any? Mother Earth, someone mentioned Mother Earth. I think we've got them all. These are the seven sustaining, very important, respectable personalities in society. We should always be offered respect. The wife of the Guru, actually, and the wives of Brahmanas in general. So we can see that when actually such persons are respected nicely, offered due service as required, as necessary, then society flourishes. And ultimately, it's a creation of Krishna's, that he tells us exactly what you need to do. Society is telling us that we should do this, we should make this law, we should make that law, and you will be happy. Well, the fact is, if you look at any statistic in terms of whether people are happy, it's not showing that they are increasing in happiness. It shows that they have more agitation, more need to depend on the state. They are more dissatisfied, more anxious, more fearful than in the past. Look at various statistics. Their health is worse. Diseases are on the increase, not decrease. So better we take a system, which Prabhupada says, is a fundamental system. And here are the components of it. Protect these five people. Respect these seven categories of people. Do these activities. Pay due attention to the four pillars of sinful life. Ignore them. Don't feed them. Practice the four regulative principles. This is the blueprint for society to succeed. Not some election campaign. You know, election campaigns also have a list of points. I will do this, I will do that, I will do this, I will do that. They're all good. There's no one who is in politics, who is in government, actually wants to cause harm to society. So their attempts are all good. But they just don't have this underlying fundamental understanding of how this world works. Who is behind it? Who is in control of it? Because that aspect is missing, their attempts to help, their attempts to serve are incomplete. So if somehow those persons, and there are many, many good persons who are capable of doing great work for society, if they can just take a little guidance from these books, this wisdom from the Shastra, Prabhupada says the face of this earth can be transformed. So we got a little hint of, a little dose of culture thrown in today, within the midst of this pastime. So I'll stop there. If there are any questions, comments, corrections...